outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
Well, I had a great time on Saturday.
Okay.
Yeah, we had a bit of a whim. There's an air show out here at the Naval Air Base, just about 8 miles from where we live. And Thunderbirds and Blue Angels were both performing in the same show, only doing that 3 times in their history, so that's a pretty big deal. After Sarah and I ended up accidentally at an air show a few years ago, we'd gone away for just a trip to be together and ended up at Laguna Beach. And at Huntington Beach, just up the road, they're having the air show for the weekend. So we actually went up on Friday and watched them rehearse, which was unbelievable, fabulous. And then it got canceled after that because that's when the oil thing broke, pipeline broke off the coast. And so they ended up canceling the rest of it. But so I just kind of whimmed it at Lewis. I said, hey, you want to go to the air show on Saturday? He goes, what air show? I told him about it. I said, you ever seen it? You ever seen jets fly like that close? He goes, never. So I invited his family at the end. He was the only one able to go. So he and I drove out. Sarah wasn't feeling well that day. So we drove out to the base for the day and set up camp near the runway and watched this air show. And it's, if you've never been to one, it's unbelievable. Just fantastic power and noise and precision maneuvers, all that stuff. And so then we got stuck in traffic getting out, spent 25 minutes going one car length, I think. It was just ridiculous. Took me an hour and a half to drive home the 8 miles.
Oh my gosh.
But the interesting thing was, a few months ago, he had a dream, Lewis did, about, I think I've shared part of this on the podcast at some point, but he said, I'm sitting with Jesus on a park bench and Lewis walks up and Jesus and I are talking. And so Jesus says to me, what I want you to tell Lewis is, and then he starts spelling out some stuff he wants me to tell Lewis. And Lewis is there, I go, I'm right here. And Jesus just keeps talking to me like he's not there. And so he tells me this dream and we're laughing about it. I think it's hilarious. Why is Jesus telling me? I said, did you get all that then, Lewis? Are you doing that? And over the next 3 months since I first heard that dream, I have had to bring that up to him 3 or 4 times. Because what Jesus said to him was, you need to stop trusting your weapons. It was about moving to what Lewis thinks a more vulnerable life without weapons. That my love is the only weapon you need. And Lewis grew up in a highly threatened environment in a number of ways and then worked with a military captain for a long time. So Lewis is, I'm telling you what, he's got weapons. He's got a lot of strengths physically and in other ways. And as we're sitting at the air show, he's just talking about, man, all the things he used to be able to trust, he can't trust in anymore. He's in a real vulnerable state right now in a number of ways. His identity stolen. He's applying for amnesty to be here in the States legally. They could pick him up any day saying, no, you don't get your amnesty because you have to declare your address. You have to do everything when you do that. And so he's in a very vulnerable spot. And then he had an accident happen and he's got some real damage that needs to be repaired on his body. So that's been a deal. So he's just feeling this. So we talked about that for a little bit and I reminded him, I said, Jesus told you, you know, his love was all the weapon you needed. He's like, oh my gosh. So he goes home that night and he has a dream. He calls me the next day. He's so excited. He was at the air show with me and Raphael was there. Dang, I didn't see him, but anyway. And we're watching the air show and the power. And I guess this angel, whatever, says to Lewis, it's amazing power, isn't it? Lewis goes, oh my gosh, it's amazing power, man. The power of the engine and all that stuff. And he goes, that's nothing. And he says, what? And he just lifted his hand up, I guess. And this wind came up and blew everything away. The airplanes, the crowd, the people, blew them all away. And he and I are sitting there alone. He goes, that's power. Oh my gosh. And then he called it all back and the wind blew everybody back in place again. This is in his dream. He's calling me the next day and he goes, I think Jesus has more power than anything I can do. I'm going, dude, he's been working on this for 3 months with you. I love the way God does that stuff. You know, it just... We're seeing this amazing display of the military might of the United States of America. Because one of the things I've been saying to Lewis is about, you know, it's not horses and chariots. It's not money. It's not stuff we can do. It's not where we can go. It's learning to live by the resource that Jesus has for us. And so he's learning that. It's been fun. It's been hilarious. And it's been very, very scary at times because this provokes a lot of his traumas and insecurities and things. So anyway. That made for an exciting weekend, man. That was cool. an air show, a work of God, just, yeah, fun stuff. I loved it.
What did he think of the air show, having experienced something like that and then going to the dream? Like, I mean, it cracks me up. Like, that, of course, Father would do something like that, right? To go in and actually experience the physical power of having those planes fly over you and the feeling of the sonic boom as they're going over. And oh my gosh. And then to have that, him just be like, oh yeah, that's amateur hour.
Yeah, to be so impressed by something that God kind of unravels in a dream, to go, why is your hope in that? And yet we all know trusting Jesus for what unfolds in our life is a growing edge for all of us, man. It's not easy. It's so easy to think of what I can do, should do, can do, gotta do, and very difficult to kind of live in the dailiness of, okay, Jesus, what are you providing for me today? And that being enough, because our fears are all out there somewhere. I don't have enough for next week. I don't have enough for next month, but I have enough for today. And that's all we're promised. And if you come live in the power of Jesus, that's where you're going to live. You're going to live alongside him, because you can't make it without him. I mean, that horses and chariots stuff for me, I've seen that my whole life long. Just the constant invitation back to don't put your hope where humans put their hope, because it's false. And his ability to do exceedingly beyond anything we could ask or ever imagine is there. But to have that happen in the context of this air show and all we talked about all day, because we're sitting there all day and waiting for different acts to happen and different things, and then walking, I mean, it was an hour and a half line to even get into the place and then to have the drive back. And we had all day together, just a great day. And then God did some neat stuff through it. So pretty cool. Mm. I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And welcome to this edition of The God Journey. Where are we going today, Kyle?
I think I want to circle back to last week's podcast, honestly.
Yeah.
You had this brilliant riff.
Brilliant riff.
I mean, you just kind of were in a zone, and I was enjoying listening to you process and watching the passion and the joy of the conversation coming up. And as we were kind of finishing up and winding down last week, talking about, you know, God being vulnerable and navigating that, and what does that even look like? And even the thought of that, the thought that came up to me was, God can't be jealous without vulnerability. Because there's a lot of passages in scripture where God talks about being himself, refers to himself as a jealous lover or a jealous God. It's like, and I just thought about that as we were processing that. I was like, that takes vulnerability. Like that takes a desire, a connection, a longing that I wouldn't normally associate. Like, because I always think of like, oh, well, God's in his totality. He has the communion of the Trinity. He doesn't need me. He doesn't need anything. And yet there's still this description of vulnerability of, I'm jealous of your love. I want your love. I want that relationship. And I don't share well with others. I don't share well with other forms of gods or other avenues of life that you're seeking in replacement of me or as a counterfeit to me. What are your thoughts to that?
My first thought is, when always I hear about God being a jealous God, and then you hear 1 Corinthians 13, where love is not jealous, and then I don't know where to end up in that cul-de-sac, right? One of the things we talked about, and we worked on Dan Hufford's book, The Misunderstood God, was to go through and say, oh, we believe God is love, and yet most of what's in 1 Corinthians 13, we don't believe God is like that at all. We believe God is a jealous God. Well, there's Old Testament references that says he is. And so what do we do with that? And where I land on some of that is that God's jealousy is not like ours. Our jealousy is, I'm not getting what I think I deserve from somebody, and I'm jealous that someone else is getting this attention. I'm jealous someone else is getting that. So I've got to scheme my way into jealousy. The way we work, the only time I've ever heard it positive between humans is in a Walter Rangren book, As For Me in My House, where he says, the jealousy of your wife, and I think probably the jealousy of your husband too, can be a great warning sign for danger. If there's a woman in your life that your wife feels threatened by, then you might want to give that relationship a second look. Like it may just be too flirtatious, too close, too whatever, and to really try. And man, I wasn't 2 years into quote unquote ministry, or Sarah and I didn't read that together. And I just said, hey, is there any women in this congregation? I was serving as an associate pastor. And she named three right off the top of her head.
Really?
Yeah. And I went, you know what? And I don't mean she thought I would cheat or they were scheming for whatever. It's just something about that relationship set off her meter. I don't know, what jealousy meter, whatever. And I thought it was very positive. Like, all three of those women were particularly needy and maybe coming off to her husband in a way that was a little threatening to Sarah. And so I've honored that. That's the only place I've seen mostly jealousy is used in a very negative sense. Mm-hmm. But that God, I mean, what does God mean when he's saying to Israel, I'm jealous for you? Does it mean he's so insecure or vulnerable? It wouldn't mean that, right? It wouldn't mean that in the same way. It would mean, I want your love, and you're giving it away, as the prophets say, to harlots or to false idols or to indulgence. You're just doing your own thing, and I'm jealous for you, for your love. And it really is, I want you is what it's calling out for, which is what you're saying. But there is, to the larger question of, does that unmask some aspect of God's vulnerability? It does. When you create a world and you create people and you want to share your love with them and they don't want your love or don't regard your love as having value over other things, that's got to be challenging in a way. Not from insecurity standpoint, just simply, man, I open my heart to you. And I tell people that's what marriage is. Marriage is the one relationship where you completely give your heart to another person. And now they have the capacity to rip it to shreds. And many people who've been in marriages had that happen for various reasons, for just weakness, for trauma, for all kinds of things. Where you give a person tremendous power when you marry them. Less power when you just love them, because love, I think, is without expectation. So I can love people who don't love me back, and I can't be damaged by that too much, right? Maybe ego is, maybe loss is, maybe grief is, but the one relationship, as I found out about a year ago, the one relationship that really hurts the most is this one. It's the one with Sarah. And God talks about being a jealous lover, or like we're the bride of Christ. I mean, the analogies of marriage are there inside of God for the relationship he wants with each of us. And so to me, that's very tender. It's not a jealousy to be afraid of. I'm jealous for you. I'm not jealous for me. I'm jealous for you. And you're missing out on the best.
And I think that's it. I think what you just said is the pinnacle of that, right? Is the longing of, I'm jealous that you don't or are currently not experiencing the fullness of the life that I so desperately want you to be able to engage with, and the fullness of relationship that I so desperately want you to be able to engage with. Like, I can't even fathom what Jesus was feeling when he was here on earth walking alongside of the people who should have known him best. When he was walking in the flesh and he was fulfilling the Torah that so many of that time had fully memorized word for word, and yet still couldn't recognize the fulfillment of that right in front of him. The heartache, the longing, the jealousy of that had to have been incredibly intense. I can't even imagine that.
Yeah, and it would be jealousy for them and their joy. It wouldn't be, our human jealousy is always about what I'm losing here. I've got to find it. And I'm sure God feels the loss of humanity that doesn't respond to him. Or like you mentioned, the Pharisees specifically. One of the best things I've heard like 20 weeks ago, and I've had it on my list ever since, never gotten to it, is this was from a guy going through a very painful family relationship. A daughter has rejected her dad because the dad is not following the legalistic religion he raised her in. So she thinks they're going to hell, him and some of the other members of the family, and just really conservative salvation is always being manipulative. And I said, what does that do to you? I asked him, we're sitting there one day, and he said, you know what's sad? They don't want the truth to be the truth. That's a powerful statement. If you don't want the truth to be the truth, now you're going to create your own reality. You're going to create your own illusion to live under. And humanity is notorious for that. The Pharisees are doing that. They didn't want the truth. And you could do that with a capital T for the Pharisees. They didn't want the truth to be the truth. They wanted their little fiefdom that they had created and their little power center. And they thought what they knew best for Israel and everything. So truth comes into their midst and they don't want the truth to be the truth. And Jesus unmasks that in the parable when he talks about the vineyard and the caretakers, and they come, and now the son, we know it's the son. If we kill him, we'll have the vineyard now. So we'll go kill him. And so Jesus says to them, you're of your father, the devil, because you do what the devil does. He lies. He lies. He lies. He lies. And that you claim to be your children of Abraham, but you have your father, the devil, because he's the father of lies. And that's where you, and that's the so many things just fold in here from what we talked about a few weeks ago, the ugly lies we believe versus the beautiful truths we have trouble accepting. And yeah. that's in this whole transformational kind of arc of how do we come to live in the wonder of what's true when the beginnings of truth threaten the fiefdoms we've created for ourselves to be comfortable, however we created those.
I feel like that's where there has to be that space of disruption in some form, right? That our fiefdoms are being challenged. They're not working well. The world that we've created for whatever reason is no longer fulfilling the needs that we want it to fulfill. I feel like that's where those inklings of truth are able to really break through the concrete that is around that in these walls that we build around the worlds that we create. That truth starts to seep away at the cracks, and then it breaks a little bit more free, and it breaks a little more free, and then all of a sudden the living water is seeping in and starting to leak into that world. And yet I feel like there's those times where in our life it's like, man, this just isn't working for whatever reason, whatever that looks like, whatever disruption or shift in our perceived reality that all of a sudden gets unveiled as, ooh, I don't know if that's as true as I thought it was going to be, or maybe that's a counterfeit of what I thought it was actually supposed to be imitating.
Yeah, because it works until it doesn't.
Yes.
And particularly in times of ease, you can hold your illusion a long, long time. It's when your illusion faces a need greater than it can answer. And then keeping your illusion together is an awful lot of work. Up until then, it isn't that much work. I'm a blessed child of God, doing this, doing that. And then something comes, cancer, unemployment, something comes. And now that illusion of just, oh, I'm sorry, everything's just great. No, no, no. And I'm practicing a religion that doesn't work, but it looks like it's working until it doesn't. And then that's where the disruption comes, the disillusioning. And then we have the choice. Am I going to let Jesus poke holes in my illusion, or am I not? Am I just going to get the duct tape out and duct tape it over, try and keep the balloon full of air? Because I don't want to, because all my comforts are based on these things being true. That's how I think brokenness works in us. We create this sandcastle and try and live inside of it and feel like, yeah, I'm safe here, until we're not. And now, challenge to the core of our being, are we willing to look for what's really true, which is more beautiful than the illusion we hold? But from inside the illusion, it doesn't look that way because it looks threatening.
No.
Because it's threatening the illusion.
It looks terrifying. And man, I was just in a conversation about that today where there were some holes that were getting poked in some illusion stuff. And literally a sentiment was, I don't want that to be true. I know that it is. It just ticks me off that it is, you know, and like I resonated with that so much because it's like, man, when he starts poking holes in some of my own personal illusions, it's like, oh my gosh, like I know I've walked with you long enough, Father, that I can smell your truth. Like I can smell your kingdom on this. Like I can see your signature on this. Your fingerprint is there. But it's kind of annoying right now because at this moment, I like it's just disruptive and it's a little painful and it's a little terrifying and that's annoying. Like it kind of ticks me off a little bit. But I know, and I've done this long enough, that I know that your life is worth pursuing. I know that if you're poking holes in that illusion, there's a reason for it. And not only that, but you've also prepped my heart for it. You've laid the foundations, you've done the groundwork to where it doesn't feel like I'm getting overwhelmed by some tidal wave, but I'm able to navigate it, walk through it, and press into this new space of life.
Yeah, we've all been in that place of not wanting the truth to be the truth. I've said that often. Yeah. I get this nudge in my heart of, please don't be true. Please, please. I'm afraid this is going to be the truth. And that doesn't necessarily come in terms of doctrine or those kind of things. It comes in terms more of situations I'm in and what's the truth about this situation versus what do I want it to be? And yeah, it's never easy to embrace the truth. That's why I think the scripture, you will know the truth and the truth will set you free. Sounds great until the truth messes with you first and you go, oh my gosh, do I need to go down that road? Particularly if we're coming out of such illusionary existences or imposter selves, or however it is that we've made a comforted life for ourselves, the truth is going to disturb that. And it usually takes, like you said, it takes a major disruption of some kind to get us to look beyond things that give us a false sense of security. But boy, at a time like that, you want to have Jesus. I know people listen to this going, why would you follow this Jesus, man? If you're just going to get to the end of your illusions, you're going to disrupt it. Because he's got the beautiful truths and reality. When you finally get your heart around what's true, and then everything around you seems to make more sense. Because now you can see people living in lies and trying to put their lies on you. And you can see the illusion that other people are after and go, yeah, I'm not after illusion anymore. You can see the horses and chariots and everybody's going to amass to do whatever it is that they want to do in the world. And you realize, gosh, all that's nothing to God. God's power blows it all away with a raise of a finger. It's that simple. And then our problem is, what we've talked about before in this whole thing is, well, then why doesn't God raise his finger to fix what I want fixed? Because mostly we're trying to fix an illusion. That's mostly what we're, you, divine finger, do the duct tape for me and fix it. And God's just, the unrelenting passion of God to bring us into what's real so we can really be shaped by his life and transformed is the most amazing process to me in the world. It is. I wish I understood it in my 20s, what I now know now in my very late 60s, since this is the last day of my 69th year as we tape this. So, wow. I'm particularly thick-headed. It took me this long to get to something that makes sense. That's just scary.
For me, it's been really intriguing to see God continuing that, to live out that work. I just had, just in the last week, I had a really interesting space encounter where I had a couple of very pointed conversations with some friends as we were just kind of processing some things. And this conversation came up where basically it was unveiled that there was one of the items on the list that I was given early on in my teens that I was said that if you don't fulfill this list, then you won't have my approval. I never, like, I've thought about that list, but I've never thought about what was on that list. And I had a moment with some friends just this last week where one of the things that was on that list popped up. And it was like God giving me a snapshot of, I've been unearthing that and I've been freeing you from that and you didn't even know it. And I go into this like beautiful time of like prayer and like, Lord, I want you to like get rid of that list, unearth it, like tear it apart, like get it out of my life. And he kind of chuckles and he's like, what do you think I've been doing? I just started dying laughing because he was like, I didn't even know to pray that prayer. And yet he was already doing it. Like, that's how good he is. Like, it was hilarious. He's like, what do you think I've been doing?
Oh my gosh. Isn't that beautiful? Love that.
I just started dying laughing and crying at the same time. I was like, man, that's incredible.
I got this from someone that kind of feeds into the space. An email from someone living with a very traumatized spouse who's not willing to deal with that trauma at this point in their life, or at least minimally enough to keep the wife hanging in. This is a multiple decade marriage. This is not something young or new. She said, I just read in Vander Kolk's book today, The Reason I Think I'm Still Here. And the book is The Body Keeps the Score, which we've talked about a lot here. He states, beneath the surface of the protective parts of trauma survivors, there exists an undamaged essence, a self that is confident, curious, and calm, a self that has been sheltered from destruction by the various protectors that have emerged in their efforts to ensure survival. And then she writes, I've met this self, and when it emerges, it's amazing. It just seems like over the years, the struggles of life have buried that self deeper and deeper inside. My fear is what happens is if he's not willing to do the work to uncover and excavate all the pain and find that self, and if he does, is there enough love left inside of me to be happy with him? That's a powerful. And you don't have to just get into trauma here, for those of you that are dealing with trauma in your lives, but this, the whole idea of the illusions we build to make ourselves feel secure, and how often they're incredibly damaging to other people around us. We may not see that because we're just surviving. So we don't see the damage being exported. And she's saying, which I have known with Sarah all my life, people go, how was it like having Sarah get through some of her trauma stuff? I've always known the real Sarah. The real Sarah that's emerging, I've always known her in bits and pieces, and then it gets lost for a while. And I just think, well, maybe that's not what's there. But the true self wants to emerge. God's inviting that self out, but it does take some work. And I don't mean works in terms of our human work. It means God's power, but it does mean us cooperating with him. I love that idea in Van der Kolk's book of that place that is really calm and confident. And people wonder, I don't know who I really am. Well, who are you when you're at rest, when you're calm, when you're confident? I read or had someone share this with me. There's seven, they're all C words, interestingly enough. So somebody worked very hard on this. But the self God created is calm, compassionate, curious, connected, confident, clear, courageous. The self God created is all those things. And trauma, trouble, sin, whatever, twists us into places of high anxiety, selfishness, lack of curiosity, lack of being connected, lack of being confident. And when we're caught in those things and we're trying to find who we really are, we'd be misled, because that's the imposter self that's pretty well shredded by the fears and the threats that encompass it. And I really like, I mean, just being able to pull that out. That's why I'm still with him, even though his trauma mode is fighting. So she's kind of been beat up most of her life. And I don't mean physically, but verbally, emotionally. Yeah. Why am I still here? Because I believe in that. I see that self in there. And I hope when he does the work finally to let that self emerge, I don't know if there'll be enough love left to be here. That's what a sad cry, but a real one.
No, it just hits home. Like, I'm not entirely even sure how to respond to that, honestly.
Honestly would be the way to respond to it. Let's not go back in the illusion here. And
yeah. Well, I think there are just times as I was listening to that and as I was reflecting on the seven C words that somebody came up with, the thing that stood out to me was, I've seen that person. Yeah. And I think each one of us have those moments where the glory of who God has made us is revealed. That genuine, authentic self is lived out in the world. And there's this sense of recognition of, ooh, I know that person. I know that I've seen them before. I recognize that person. I know that person to be true. And yet it feels so often like a wisp of smoke. Like it's here and there's a wisp of cloud and that person shows up and then all of a sudden the other stuff closes it back down. The other imposters or the fears or the doubts or the shame or the trauma or whatever, it just takes that person and locks them back up in the esophagus. What's the word, the Egyptians would bury people in?
I was going to say coffin, sarcophagus. Is that what you mean?
Sarcophagus. Yes, that's the word I was going for.
That's a fancy five-bit word there, Kyle.
But just that feeling of even like how they were buried, it feels like your hands are tied up against your chest and they couldn't move. There was nothing for the body to move. And it feels like that same feeling of it being locked back up again. And then that self is not allowed to express itself in the world again. And just the joy of that having less and less power, the locks and the things that allow that to shut or bind or trigger that become less and less. Even the sensors or the need for that to be there becomes less and less. It just, man, it's an incredible, incredible thing. And yet it's not an easy or predictable journey in any way, because like this person who submitted this letter to you, they don't know what the outcome is going to be. They don't know what it's going to look like as they press into love and as they walk this out. They don't know what the end result of the story is going to be. We're not far off from a moment in your life, the anniversary of a moment in your life where
we're not far away from the moment. We're not that far downrange from what happened.
No, we're not. Yeah.
What Vandercook says, a self that has been sheltered from destruction by the various protectors that have emerged. So, you know, that's trauma in its positive sense, right? These protectors protected this life from threat, from abuse, from exploitation, whatever.
Yeah.
But now they need to let go for this courageous, confident, creative, compassionate self to find freedom in the world. And there is no greater joy in my relationships with people I love and know than to watch this happen, to watch it happen in Sarah, to watch it happen in Lewis. And I correspond with people. I was on the phone with someone this morning and I see it, man, I've known them for a decade probably. And to see now, the conversation I had with them today is 40 miles from a conversation I might've had with them a year ago or 2 years ago, 3 years ago. I mean, and they've done the work. That's a term used in the psychology arena. And it's works of reading the Bible and praying and doing all that. It means I've taken the look inside myself and trying to find out what's real and not real, what's true and not true. I'm willing to take on my illusion and not let it, in the name of security, in the name of not being threatened, in the name of, to find out that my preoccupations are not legitimate in the culture in which I live. So Sarah has this threat response left over, but she's not living in a threatening environment. But then the threat response makes the environment appear threatening. It's just strange how that works, because it's providing the comfort and it wants to, whether it's the firefighter or whatever in the brain that's, I'm going to protect this child at all costs. And so everything around her is a threat instead of, no, it's not a threat. There's people around you who love you, who care about you. And this man, whatever he has to take on in his darkness and, you know, doesn't want to. I know people like that too. I know people who would rather medicate their PTSD symptoms than take a look inside and go, what might I need? And some of it's hopelessness. I've tried before, it didn't work, so I'm just going to medicate now. But the process of watching this happen in people, and to me, why does it happen? Brilliance of God, which almost seems like a farce to say. Of course he's brilliant. Of course he is. But the brilliance of God that he loves me, learning to live loved, is step one to anything else, because it's being loved that gives you the environment to risk the illusion, to risk the threat, to find out what's true, to move toward healing. It's inside that I'm confident in his love for me, even if I'm not confident in my abilities for me. So the confidence, the way the cross works and redemption works, our confidence doesn't have to start inside here. It starts inside him. Because I'm loved, because I'm valued, because he cares, because he's going to watch out after me, I can exhale enough to begin to see where the illusions and where my pretense, where the world I've set up to protect myself is no longer necessary. And that doesn't come in one fell swoop. It's an awakening. You're slowly waking up to the fact, like the story I shared about Lewis, waking up to the fact that my weapons, whatever I can put my hands on that I've based my security in, is not going to take me further on this journey. So Jesus is inviting me to trust his power over mine. And that, winning that is months, if not years, of walking us into a reality that we can learn to live, not by principles we've applied, but a more intuitive sense of freedom, which to me is the ultimate freedom. It's freedom without trying to think you're free, without trying to act free.
Yeah.
It's a freedom that doesn't influence me anymore. And it used to. I used to be a very angry guy. That anger doesn't influence me. Even when people are doing things to me that deserve anger, it really would merit it. I don't have it. I can cough it up if I need to. I can call it to the fore. I can work it up. But I don't want it anymore. I just soon say, okay, yeah, if that's the journey you need to go on, then I'm sorry, it's going to cost something, but I'm willing to let you go down that journey as opposed to get angry and feel violated and do all what I need to do to protect Wayne. I just haven't had that need to, which is weird, because that's not the way Wayne grew up thinking. It's not the way he thinks now. It's like the father, as jealous as he might be for the prodigal son, he lets him go. He lets the consequences of his own darkness weigh against his performance until he's disrupted. He's really come to that place of, oh my gosh, I need help. Yeah, you do. And the only help I've got is back home. And I've got to make that risky journey back home just to even get a meal, to even feel sated.
And this is where, for me, I am so incredibly grateful for his character and nature and the level of love that he has. I get into dialogue a lot, especially in the psychology world, that revolves around the humanistic thought. And so there's this idea where, well, no, you're the divinity is in of yourself, and you have all this power inside of you, blah, 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 blah. All the, I mean, there's all these ideas around that. And for me, it's like, man, I've seen myself in good spaces where I'm really doing well and I'm showing up in the world and it's powerful. Even that isn't enough. Even that isn't enough. And that, like, when I think about overcoming the trauma or doing the work to destroy that list that was in my life for so long and how it influenced the way that I lived my life, I know, even at my absolute best, in my fullest expression of wholehearted living, I couldn't handle that. And that's so, like, that's why there's just so much joy in knowing that there's something that much bigger in the world that loves me so passionately and so deeply that they're willing to give, literally give their life to see that be undone in my life. I think about that idea of, well, it's all in yourself. The power's in yourself. You are your own divinity. I know at times I've enjoyed that idea. I watch my own behavior and say, oh no, I'm enjoying the fact that I can be my own, you know, I'm being my own version of God in this situation. And yet that rarely turns out well. In fact, I can't really think of a situation where it
for sure
turn out well.
Sure.
It's such an incredible blessing that there is a power and a force in the universe that loves us that much and is willing to crash into our world with such a disruptive love for the sake of our lives. That just continues to blow me away.
It does. It's hard to imagine people getting through this without that. If you've got to call the confidence out of yourself, the calmness out of yourself. I do think God's so wonderful. I don't even think God cares who gets credit for stuff like this. So people are thinking, oh, I'm calling the calmness out of myself. And it may well be God at work in you, providing the calmness. It may well be, because God cares about his kids more than he cares about getting credit for it. So is there going to be a calmness there? Just because in him we all live and move and have our being. But the willingness to take a look there, I got this from the UK, as a lady wrote, as an optimist, I shove trauma and suffering deep down, choosing to ignore it rather than deal with it. Father has been saying to me for years, be still and know. And the rest of the scripture is Psalm 46:10, be still and know that I'm God. Now, Lewis had that scripture in his dream from Raphael, be still. If you want to find this power, be still and know. Because it comes inside of God, which is inside of you. It's not outside of you. It's inside of you, but it's not you. It's him. He said, but I knew that there would be much healing needed, which would be painful. So it was easier not to go there. I know his consuming fire is actually his love. That's a great way to see it. Because what we fear, we see that consuming fire. I'm going to burn up your illusion. But that consuming fire from our illusion is the love and intimacy that once we discover what that is, it will take all the fear out of it. I know his consuming fire is actually his love. I know he will not necessarily take away the suffering, but I need to start the process knowing he is in me, beside me, bearing what I bear. I love that email. I love someone saying, okay, I'm an optimist. I'm going to keep putting on the best face. I'm going to keep, but I do know there's something down there. And then what do we do about that? The work is be still and know. And get a brother, sister alongside you. Somebody knows what they're doing to encourage you, but it's in the stillness that the insight comes, the freedom comes, the true self can emerge. And that's what God wants for all of us.
Yeah, it's that invitation of stop running. Whatever it might look like, whatever that busyness, that running, that distraction, stop. Just pause, right? Like I was just thinking about that process. And when I hear people talk about doing the work, the first thing I think about is pausing, is actually holding space to check in with your heart and see what, like, hello, nice to meet you. I'm Kyle. I've been ignoring you for the last decade.
It's like a child throwing an unnecessary tantrum, right? Because the first thing you need to do, take a breath. When they're all wound up, they can't even breathe, right? Because it just all spiraled up and it's unnecessary. No one here is trying to hurt you. No one here is trying to, in fact, I'm trying to give you something wonderful, but in your current state, it's not going to seem wonderful. So, and I think that's for many of us, that's where it does start. I just need to find a way to exhale. And I think that's what living love is about. That's why it's the first step in this process. Until I can know his love, I have a revelation of it in my heart and come to not necessarily feel it, know it.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily an emotional feeling thing. It's a heart thing, but I know that I'm loved. Now I can exhale. And now I can see what he has. And if he wants to poke a hole in my illusion, it's because he's a jealous God that wants me to find all the freedom I can find in him and not be badgered by all the pain trying to rule my life.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.